paper separated. There's probably two of them there. There is.
There you go.
Thank you, dear.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we've got a petition that has been submitted by Buck Kathy Perry to name a new road that they put in that is a new access point to Perry's Beach. It's coming off of Point Comfort Road, going down to Bull Pond Road on the other end. Bull Pond Road is private. They've had a lot of trouble, I think, keeping the road maintained and acquiring a right-of-way, so they've been able to acquire a new right-of-way. We'll put this one in. It'll be a better access for them down there. Back in 2015, we adopted, the county adopted the road name change policy and petition process. Emergency management is assigned as the department that handles these, but Mitch has got his hands tied with other things, so Scott asked me if I would take this on, and if want that to be a permanent change, we can look at changing that requirement. The ordinance and emergency management would still be a reviewing department, so he'd still have input on it if he needed to. Part of the process is a 30-day review period, which emergency management, the tax department, and the fire departments that would be involved get to review it and make sure there's no problems, make sure the name is not duplicative of another name in the county, and then we make a recommendation based on that review back to you, and then you schedule a two-week out. You get a two-week notice for a public hearing, and once the hearing has been held, then you can approve or deny the petition. So I went ahead and gave you a little bit of information about this road, which you don't, you know, need to take any action on it. You can't take any action on it until after the public hearing anyway. But just so you would be familiar with it before it comes to the public hearing.
Are they the only residents that will be affected by this?
Well, Perry's Beach has got several homes down there. Most of them are secondary.
It sounds like, I haven't seen it, but it sounds like it's running parallel with the river from Point Comfort to Perry's Beach.
Yeah, it kind of, and I can go down and get some pictures. It hasn't been mapped, it hasn't been surveyed or anything. But it's Hal Lawrence's land and George Perry Jr.'s land. I know him as Buck. I've known him my whole life as Buck. Most people know him as Buck, and that's how he applied for this. I think it was under Buck Perry, it's off of Point Comfort. Yeah, to my understanding, it's before you get to the development, it's cutting through one of the fields. And then just going to kind of wind
so
down.
So this is a new road, mm-hmm. Not a change.
Right.
Not a name change.
Right. It's a new road.
Okay,
name.
Great.
Have they done anything yet? Petition or anything yet?
They've applied and submitted the petition.
Yeah.
And it has been signed off by the Colerain Fire Department Chief, and it's been signed by the property owners that it's going through, Hal Lawrence and George. And I talked with Jonathan about it too to make sure that it wasn't anything that was going to be subject to our subdivision regulations, which requires if you're changing or name or creating a new street, it has to go through a subdivision review. But they're not planning on dividing any lots or developing the property. It's basically for right of way, and they're not planning on paving it or anything like that. And with all the issues,
hey Jonathan,
with all the issues that have been going on with roads, and this is, I'm throwing this out here because it's not in the ordinance or the policy, but it's something we might want to consider in the future, is if people are going to be putting in new roads or they want to name a road, that somebody is signing up, they got to get property owner signatures anyway, that they're doing some sort of maintenance agreements.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, because some of these are still going to be private roads. They're not petitioning the state to take them over.
Well, you have a copy.
The state won't take them unless they pave them to their standards.
Right. So you have a copy of the road ordinance, correct?
Yes.
Okay. That should be attached to it. So that
yeah, we can do that.
And that's what needs to be done. And this is what it is for a private road.
So we'll notice this up for a public hearing in July, if that's okay. We just didn't want y'all to be surprised when it comes up in the first meeting in July.
Yeah, I don't know if you've had one. You may have had one to go through since 2015. Because I
we
feel
had
like with the ordinance.
Change with the Spivey.
Change. Well, that's why I made the difference. Right. But this is not a change. This is naming a road, right? Okay.
Is there any
new road?
Well, they would show up at the public hearing, I would think.
Right, I just didn't know anybody
personally. Have I heard what?
Whether somebody written the name of somebody else. Is there any controversy?
No. And I do, I have had somebody else call that I sent a packet out to that's looking at naming it. It's basically a driveway, it's got two houses on it out in the Lewiston area. It's just outside of the ETJ of Lewiston. But she said she was getting up in age, and she's just worried that 911, she had to call 911, they wouldn't be able to know exactly which house is hers. So she would feel better if she could name it and then have an actual address on that lane and a road name sign up at the road. And with, so I sent her all the information, and she'll be sending that back in.
So there are only two owners of the, all the property that touched this road, right? Just those two?
With that part, and then this one that's coming for public hearing, that's all that I have seen. And it's, it goes across Howe's land. I want to say it goes across Buck's land and then a little part of Howe's and then back on Buck's on the other side, too.
Because that's the main piece of the policy. It says that, you know, anyone who owns property adjacent to that road has a right to say whether they want it or not. So we need to make sure, but it doesn't touch anybody else.
Yeah. Yeah. And another thing is that without a survey showing where the road is, I can ride out there. And
We did it, we went over to mapping, right? And there is something there now? Nothing?
No, this
nothing?
Is a completely new road. Seat.
Not even a bar path or anything there?
There may be, but I looked it up on the GIS and I couldn't see a farm path. And I could see what looked like an easement cut through the woods, probably for power lines, is what it looked like to me. It didn't look like a path. Usually the way they look on the map, it's just a straight line and it's a little area that doesn't have any trees that they cut out for the power lines. But I didn't see a path on the GIS.
And start with something.
Do we need a motion on that? Just
no, we just wanted to give you the information.
All right. Let's go.
So the public hearing will be at the July meeting.
Thank you, Tracy.
You're welcome. Thank you.
July 1st.
All right. Mr. Sauer.
Yeah. Well, if we keep
lighting
on
resolution
in reverse order. Yeah.
Yep.
And this was the model resolution put together by the Pitt County clerk and shared with all the counties in the Biden service area. And I presume most everybody's seen some of the news articles and heard some of the discussion.
I think when they did that resolution that all the facts were not out. I'm not really thrilled about signing the resolution at this point because we don't know enough about the whole situation.
Can you read the resolution, Scott?
Sure. We, the people of Bertie County in eastern North Carolina, have benefited tremendously from the health care provided by Biden Health in partnership with the Brody School of Medicine at East Carolina University. And whereas Biden Health is committed to having high-quality health care services accessible to all people in rural eastern North Carolina, regardless of ability to pay. And whereas Viden Health encompasses Viden Bertie Hospital in Bertie County, as well as community hospitals in Beaufort County, Duplin County, Edgecombe County, Pitt County, Hertford County, Chowan County, and Dare County, in addition to Viden physician practices throughout eastern North Carolina. these partners joined together to improve the health and well-being of Eastern North Carolina. And whereas the proposed budget by the North Carolina Senate cuts Vital Medical Center's Medicaid reimbursement by approximately $35 million beginning July 1st, 2019. And whereas this would be in addition to the $38 million annual cut to Vidant resulting from changes to the state health plan taking effect on January 1st, 2020. Whereas together this $73 million cut equates to about 3% of the annual operating budget, which is more than Vidant's operating margin for fiscal year 2018. These cuts will eliminate 100% of the system's bottom line. And whereas Vidant Health remains and will continue to serve as the primary affiliated teaching hospital for the Brody School of Medicine at East Carolina University. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Bertie County Board of Commissioners opposes cuts to funding for Vidant Health as the teaching hospital for the Brody School of Medicine at East Carolina University, and urges the North Carolina General Assembly to keep in place funding necessary to assure access to high-quality health care for all people in Eastern North Carolina. Be it further resolved that all counties in Eastern North Carolina that benefit from the services offered by Vidant Health and its partners are urged to adopt a similar resolution to send to their legislative delegations, and be it further resolved that this resolution be immediately sent to all members of the North Carolina General Assembly and the governor.
I agree with that.
I have no issue with that at all. Those numbers are right. The Senate bill that is out there right now, that is the right amount, and that is the $38 million is what they were also looking
for. Exactly.
What's the reservation?
Well, for one, Vidant brought this on themselves. The actions that they took by kicking some board members off of their board brought this upon themselves. That came out of Senator Steinberg's mouth.
Okay, well,
I had a long conversation with him.
If I can step a little bit further than that, okay.
And they're concerned about UNC now. I saw your post.
And I saw where you said that they were for sale also.
Uh-huh.
And that you told them they were for sale. Uh-huh. They're not for sale. They haven't been for sale. What they found out was that UNC had hired Kane and Associates, okay, which is a banking investment firm, and this was UNC had hired them. Behind the scenes, because UNC is trying to grow their healthcare program, which they're even wanting to reach into South Carolina and also to Virginia. And Kane and Associates is a banking firm that specializes in medium-sized and small hospital associations as far as buying them out, okay? This was done behind Vidant's back. The county commissioners of Pitt County is who decides on that board, okay? It's not Vidant. They wanted two seats for East Carolina people to be on that board, and that's what it boils down to.
All of that to me is kind of irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
Vidant is the hospital here that serves the people here. They are at risk. There's legislation on the floor to be voted on any day. We need to show that we are opposed to that legislation.
And I agree, but I want to make it clear. When you posted that they were for sale, they're not for sale. Okay, they have it for sale. Okay, just letting you know. I don't have a problem with it.
No, I think we need to.
Okay.
I should know this, or maybe something I don't know. What is the reason for the cut? What is the reason they're giving for the cuts? Is there a specific reason?
Are you talking about for the $35 million? Okay, the cuts were because Pitt County Commissioners, okay, decided that they were going to waive those six seats. I think it was six
nine.
Seats. Nine seats, okay, of UNC. That UNC would not be able to sit on that board. Could sit on the board they were appointed. There was going to be a different appointment arena of how it was done. Okay, there's an agreement that was put together several years ago. Okay, I talked to Howard today about it. Okay, also.
They're two different things. Two different things. One, the state has decided as part of their Medicaid, new Medicaid expansion, whatever they want to call it, the decrease to payback in Europe to the hospital system is estimated to be $400 million for the state.
Mm-hmm.
Vidant's piece is $40 million.
That's the Medicaid
reimbursement. That's right, they're going to cut it. And that's the big piece that they came to us beforehand, right? This other piece, right, that's just a behind the scenes
retaliation.
Yeah, that's, you know, that doesn't matter.
Let's take it out of this.
No. I'm not.
Why?
I'm good.
Well, the $38 million is real. That is, but that's what they're faced with.
Mm-hmm. But the bottom line, rather, whatever the reason may be, we're looking at people's lives.
Yes, exactly. It still discriminates against the rural and the poor. And that's all there is to it.
That's $35,000 by kicking those folks off of the board. What I was told, I'm no expert on this by no means, but what I was told was now they don't qualify for that funding. You know, why couldn't Plymouth Hospital say, okay, you're funding Biden now, and they don't qualify for state funding, but you're funding them, why can't we get some funding?
I don't know the detail. All I know is that what is at risk to these, so I've been told, is both the pieces of that funding. Right now, that's what's at risk.
That's right.
Yes. But we don't want that to be at risk.
No, not the $38 million.
And the Plymouth Hospital is not part of a teaching hospital either. Brody School of Medicine is at Biden, and Biden pays for that. A lot of that money, it goes to Brody School of Medicine.
But by doing away with those 9 appointments, they no longer qualify for that money.
Thank you, sir.
Uh-huh. We have any more discussion?
No.
Okay. Can I have a motion on the floor?
So moved.
Can I have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No, I'm along with y'all, but I ain't happy with it. By no means.
Okay. All right.
I'm not going to send a resolution up with 4 signatures.
Okay.
Some support fighting. And they're going to need it too.
All right.
Hi. Hey, Mr. Chairman, we've got, I'll be here to run through our bid tabulation list. And if you've noted, we've got this item up twice on the agenda, the work session and then discussion later on. My hope is if we can come to a conclusion, that we could send him back home to Greenville and we could just report out to the audience the direction that the board's going to take. And if y'all wanted to wait to take any action till then, you could. But I just had a feeling that there might be some extensive conversation and questions you'd want to.
But I'm also prepared if I need to stick around to be present, if that's the pleasure of the board. So okay. That's really your prerogative.
Alvin, it's always a pleasure to see you. Thank you for what you're doing for us. Yeah.
Well, thank you. This is a copy of an email that I shared with Mr. Sauer in terms of some thoughts regarding the initial value engineering, and this is the same email, but I just took it. Did you need a copy of this too, sir?
Yeah, please.
So, we had a good discussion middle of last week with A.R. Chesson. Will came to our office, he's one of their estimators, came in and he pretty much was open book. He had all a 3-ring binder with bid tabs by division. To sort of summarize where the bids ended up, we had 4 bids on bid day. I'm sure some of this has been relayed to everyone, but just I haven't said it in person, so I figured I'd do that. The lowest bid, base bid, was 3.89 million, and then the bids went up from there, with the next closest one being Wimco Corporation out of Washington at 4.15. So if you take ARHS's number and you say how far over what we were thinking is that, it's about 6% higher, which in this market isn't great, you know, crazy far off. We've seen worse in both directions, people overcompensating and being worse. But we basically were trying to aim for $250-$260 a square foot, right in that range, and we're $262, something like that, if you look at sort of area under roof. So we're not completely left field, but that does leave us in a position where we want to be good fiduciaries of the money that we've been charged with.
I think you and I even talked about $250 a square foot.
Yeah,
we're close.
So we're not, you know, way out in left field by any means, but there are some things that when we sat down that seemed sort of to be blunt head scratchers. You know, what's going on here is the site number. So one thing that we liked about ARHS's bid is they used probably the highest of bidders that came to the table, the highest percentage of local work. of any of the contractors. So they believe that their site number was unique to them in the bidding package, and that was a contractor from Bertie County that submitted that site number.
And who was that?
I'm not.
It was Boyd Coburn.
Right. Well, okay. It's unofficial until they execute contract. But yes.
Okay.
I do not believe Boyd was quoted in the other numbers, so that was a pretty significant part of the difference. One of the other big differences between them and the other bidders was about $100,000 difference was the other bidders, we believe, had all of the drywall and specialty divisions packaged into one package, making it less hands to touch, but that was Precision Walls, we believe, on a number of different parts. They're a big drywall contractor that do a lot of different things. Because that number seemed inordinately high, Chesson basically subbed that out to multiple smaller local contractors, and they saved $100,000 with the same scope of work. So that was a big part of why they were about $200,000 below the next closest bidder, or those two packages. So they don't feel like they left any money on the table. They don't feel like they are bad off because of that. Anytime someone's significantly low, that's the first question that we have. They said no, by no means. Then we went down our cost estimate, and we really looked on a division by division basis. And what I mean when I say that is there's sort of the general conditions, then there's all the site work as a package, concrete work, the masonry work, all of the metal, structural steel and metals package, the rough carpentry, which would include the casework, the built-in casework, the thermal and moisture protection, which would be where your roof and your insulation for your building would be. We basically went through on a divisional by divisional basis, and the concrete was high, but that's uniformly high. There's a concrete plant pretty close by. It was just abnormally high in terms of the cost per square foot. The masonry was also, and I'm going to kind of run through a summary first, and then we're going to get to specific value engineering items. Masonry was a little bit expensive. We were trying to do some pretty nice things on the cooperative extension side where they don't have a slope roof to kind of offset the fact that they don't have a slope roof on that side. It does look fairly dressy. We could do that simpler if we needed to. But anything that's heavy with gas being sort of volatile and the unknowns of what's going on with tariffs, any of the products that are heavier or require longer manufacturing time seem to be the ones most impacted. Through that volatility, because ultimately when they're giving you a price now, they may not actually procure that product until further out, so they're basically trying to lock down the procurement of that whatever it is that they're buying fairly far out as well, and so they're trying to insulate themselves against escalation. The structural steel, there is 89 tons of structural steel in the building. That includes rebar, all the trusses. That's a lot for a building this size. It's significantly higher than we thought we would end up with, but that includes all the miscellaneous steel. So that was one item where we said, can we simplify anything? That was really just a can we simplify something to make it more true to our numbers. On the rough carpentry division, there's a lot of casework in this building. So there, and a lot of that is sort of specialty casework. Some of it is necessary, the circulation desk in the library. There's a check-in desk for cooperative extension. There's also in the teaching kitchen, there's a fair amount of casework that's what I'll call necessary casework. But then there are a lot of other things that may not necessarily be required. So we could have, for instance, in the break room of the library, we've got a counter and they've got a huge DVD collection that requires someone to build a custom cabinet to house so that you optimize the size so that the DVDs aren't just fitting in a drawer. That's what they have now. If we were going to move, we could look at a scenario where they have a filing cabinet that has adjustable shelving and you just have a countertop over that. So we could look at some places where you could save some money in the casework fairly easily. There also is a significant amount of casework right now, the way we've got it shown in the common room, that could be shared. And the idea there was that there would be lockable cabinets, so that cooperative extension could lock cabinets on one side of the room and library could lock cabinets on the other side of the room. That may or may not be necessarily a requirement in that big open space.
They have plenty of storage.
There's a lot of space, but we were, we felt like we were close enough that we went ahead and included it that way on bid day. The doors and windows, so the Chesson told us that they had a number for all of the exterior glazing and framing that was $50,000 below the number that they included on bid day. And it was from a contractor out of the Greensboro area that they had never used before.
Was that included in their bid or
no? No, that was not.
It's not. So this could be savings there.
That could be a $50,000 line item that and I understand that there was a little bit of concern on the part of the board with regard to AR Chesson just as the low bid contractor, just being completely open book. And so we did a little bit of due diligence with regard to that concern. And we do know of a project that I think it was a little north of here that didn't go quite, it's a county project that didn't go quite like that county foresaw, but that particular courthouse project was one that was built in four. It was a four-county project, and every single contractor that did that project was embroiled in issues. And AR Chesson basically told me it was largely because of the design, and that designer is no longer in business under that name. So that's the story I got from them. We've done a lot of work with AR Chesson. They're usually very cost competitive. They use local folks. We know what they're good at. They know what we're good at. Conversely, we kind of know what things we need to give special attention to. They are good at striking strong. They usually have good local participation, but sort of finishing strong and doing all the sort of button up stuff at the tail end is something where we know we'll have a little bit of work, but every time you get to a project, you're better off if you know the strengths and weaknesses of the other partners than not. And so we have full confidence that that's a non-issue. So just wanted to put that out there. But from a value engineering standpoint, the reason I throw out the glass is if we said, hey, we would like you to take that, and they've never worked with that party before, I did not want to play favorites with the value engineering. That seems like very low-hanging fruit, but at the same time, they're obligated to make sure that they feel comfortable with whoever's number they include on the table.
Right, but they're the ones that picked this glazer, correct? The one that glazer. I mean, they have gotten another bid from somebody else that's typically that's $50,000 cheaper than what they've got who they normally use, correct?
They have a number that's $50,000 cheaper than who they normally use for the same thing, but they did not carry that cheaper number on bid day. So if we said, hey, we want to reap that $50,000
savings. No, I get that part. But what I think I just heard you say is that if we decide to go that route, they've never used this guy before.
That's okay? True.
That's what I just heard you say a second ago.
Yes, sir.
Okay. But still, that's their responsibility to manage that building. Okay.
Yep.
And we want the savings, and that's where it boils down to.
Right. And so what we would need to do, so what I tried to do with this email is basically come up sort of an unweighted,
I guess what I'm list. Saying now is it's not the responsibility of the board. If we say, hey, let's do the savings and go $50,000, it's still the responsibility of the general contractor and you who are being paid to oversee the job site to manage that.
That's true.
Okay.
That's true.
And if you didn't have confidence, you wouldn't bring it in here.
So I basically, in not weighting any of these things,
mm-hmm.
I'm not making a case for any of them. I'm basically saying these are items. If this board wants to reap all of these things, that's completely the
but that can get us back into the ballpark too.
It does, but it's also this is more VE than we would need if we went down this list.
Right.
Yeah, but there's a different way of saying the same thing. We should not be the ones having to make the decision if we said, yes, we want to reap this, and this is a qualified contractor, right, then we expect the finished work to be the same as it should have been, regardless.
I hear what you're saying. I guess what I'm saying is that we need to come up with a prioritized list for what we're going to value engineer, because these aren't fixed numbers on the table. Now, in the case of this one, it is a fixed number. He's got two bids. If the second guy says, I'm going to honor my number, and
he's comfortable
and
with
it, then
it would be crazy of us not to do it.
Right. And I just want to make it clear that, you know, it's their responsibility. That's what I was trying
right.
to say.
But they could also, I guess what I'm saying is, they could also say, we followed back up with them, and well, they're getting ready to go bankrupt, and
sure.
we were not comfortable with that. So I just right. want to be transparent
that.
About
we
that.
We get that.
So kind of working backwards here from that line item, the wood decking and millwork. So the wood decking on the
that's
library
it.
Side is some variant of this. Now, this is
right.
fir, not pine, but it basically would look like this, and you would see this from the underside of the space on the steel trusses.
Mm-hmm.
If we were to take this out and exchange it with a steel deck, which all of you have been in places like Walmart, where you see the underside of a steel deck up 25 feet in the air.
That's the only thing that I would have a problem with, because to me, that gives the decor to the building. It makes it much warmer, the whole nine yards.
I'm not making a case for any of these. I'm basically saying this is roughly the value associated with this line item. That's the wood decking and reductions in millwork. So we believe that through reductions in millwork, because there is so much millwork in the building, that we could reap somewhere between $30,000 and $40,000 in that combination of money.
That finished stage of millwork that we're talking about is really what is going to finish off this building to make it look right, special.
Right.
And that's just me speaking. I don't know what the rest of the board is speaking on that, but that's just me.
So let's kind of talk real quickly through all these, and then maybe have a discussion about sort of, because you know, everyone in our office that's put a lot of time into different parts of the project feels very passionately about how we should prioritize things. And I basically said, look, it's my job to be completely objective about this and say, where did we achieve value on bid day, where did we not? And that's really what I'm looking for. In terms of the commercial hood, so from a functional standpoint, we have a commercial kitchen effectively in this building that has a commercial grade hood, exhausts a lot of air, no different than you would have in a restaurant, and it's, I don't know the frequency of use it will have, but if you've gone to a fellowship hall where they have two residential grade electric ranges, they do not put a commercial hood
right.
over the top of that. Any volunteer fire department, churches, they don't. So we're spending probably in the neighborhood, just the hoods alone are 36, but the amount of air that you're having to put into that room, easily the combination of those two things is $50,000. Just for the fact that you are making that truly commercial. Now that's what the team asked us for.
Yeah,
so there was a lot of time involved in making sure from an approval standpoint that all of that was completely kosher. Now if you were going to have the health department come out and inspect this location, like if you compare this to a private restaurant, the only difference in this and a private restaurant is effectively that you pay for the health department to come out and certify that on an annual basis, and you put up the postal sign, and that you're charging for a plate. As soon as those two things do not occur, then you don't have the health department involved. But this kitchen, from a standpoint of what's there, is not different from what you would see in another location. So it's that quality level of commercial kitchen from a standpoint of the infrastructure. That's in any restaurant, grill that you go to, this is where all the money is.
Well, let me ask you a question. Reference, but going back to the range, the gas grill you're talking about, or the gas or electric, it can be gas as long as it's just four burner. Four burner distinguishes from commercial, because anything above four burners is going to be commercial, which would be six burner, okay, or more. So if we stay at a four burner, then we can go to the residential range unit.
There, a lot of volunteer fire departments will even let you put two residential electric in one space. Usually with the gas, assuming, because most of the gas typically will have a fifth burner. And so that's usually one of the things that they get a little squirrely on about saying okay to.
Okay, well, either way, I know it's four burner versus six, but if we stay with that, then we can save that money, correct?
This would be and I want to be forthright, this would be a program change from what one of our stakeholder groups asked us to do. But there is a lot of money. My understanding presently is they do not necessarily have, or at the time of the design, they did not have funding earmarked for the kitchen equipment that they were going to put in anyway.
Have you gone back to them with this? Since this is something they asked for, that you negotiated this with them, have they spoken to this potential question?
Not at this time, because what I would like to do is talk through all of this in general terms. It could be that the board says, this is something that we ought to consider. Please go back, talk to your user. Then we would do that and say, is this value worth savings? But at this point in time, the other thing to consider is the bids were reasonably competitive. I don't think it's bad pricing per se. And one of the things I really hope we don't do is do some really good value engineering and then through the course of the project add things back in, because prices we have now, whether it's these prices or any of the alternates, if we decide to add things in the course of the project, they won't be at these same prices. So
the only thing is that we were not privy to those discussions with that partner, so I can't tell you how important this is to me. And I would not want to make that decision not knowing what their input would be on this particular thing.
This is why I'm partially glad that we're having this discussion sort of outboard of the contractor and outboard of the user groups necessarily driving how that works, because ultimately I don't necessarily know that they understand the full cost ramification of what they're asking us to do. And honestly, probably a third of the time that we spent on cooperative extension was wrapped up in that kitchen. So
it was when we built that cooperative extension down the road here. The kitchen was very important. Right. But at that stage, they also didn't care to have the big stove with six burners and all this other stuff. So I don't know what's changed since then, because we had four burners and we had residential in there. But it was a beautiful, huge kitchen that was in there. Cabinets were custom made, the whole nine yards.
Would the residential exhaust be adequate?
So the residential exhaust would be, the way they described the use to us is that they have summer cooking classes largely for youth that are off during the summers. And it's not like a restaurant where they're cooking 4 hours at a time. That's not the kind of use the space will ever get. So part of what I try to do is at the tail end of this, really look back and say, okay, what money are we spending for what value in every single circumstance? And I think for how they're using this space on a regular basis, I would answer yes, but I would probably need to sit down with Billy's team and make that case. But from my understanding of actually how they're going to use this on an everyday basis, they're not going to be broadcasting HGTV cooking classes 7 hours a day. That's not what's happening.
And again, I want you to talk to them about, but the answer for that question, code says you can do that. That's what can be used. Okay, so the code book says that you can go to that residential in that area. So of course, he'll run that by them and find out what the real need is. But you're going from $200 to $50,000.
If at some point in the future they were to upgrade to the commercial line, how do you deal with that?
So that would be challenging, because right now you have a mechanical system that basically has makeup air for that room, because basically when that hood is shooting all that air out, you've got to have new air coming back in that's conditioned. So you're not going to be able to very easily retrofit that after the fact. Gotcha. Because it's not as simple as just add the hood. The air unit would also not be there.
But if I understood you correctly, another stove could be added in there. Is that correct?
You could have two. I'll have to talk with your local inspections department, but we've done a lot of our volunteer fire departments with two.
If that's needed, if it would be needed.
Right. So okay. I think that from a functional standpoint, if that was something that we needed to ferret out a little bit more with the user, we'd be more than happy to do that. But ultimately, they would have to say, we can still make that work that way. And then there's a pretty significant amount of money on the table should we do that. That's basically the short of it. Yeah.
And they asked for a six burner or?
We actually have, we have two exhaust hoods in the space. So I've got the full layout here if anyone would like to see that and the full list of equipment.
There were six burner.
What kind of stove was
so they those? Actually have two separate, I've got the make and model of everything, but they've got two separate stoves. One that basically faces out into the audience, and one sort of on a back wall. So there's two separate hood systems. The hood line items themselves for the commercial hoods are $36,000.
Yeah, but the stoves, are they six burner or four burner?
I think they're 2 6 burner gas.
Okay. Gas that goes to present. Commercial there.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. So they're six burner, right? So if you went to the other non commercial, you got to cut back to four burners. So you're changing both the stove and the vents now.
Right, right.
That's why we got to have the discussion. Now we can, once having that discussion with our partner, right, then our fiduciary responsibility then kicks in. And we can say, yeah, if we hear you, we can't afford it.
Right.
Or maybe we can. But we need that piece on this issue, I think, before we do it. Because it's not just the hood, it's not the hood.
What did they have in the old kitchen?
What I just said, they had a residential and a pass code, okay? And they also had a residential four burner stove, okay?
And I think it was electric.
Wasn't gas,
wasn't it?
It was electric. Yeah. And
one stove.
But I think, you know, in conversation, in reference to gas versus electric, you didn't have an open flame going with kids in that room.
Okay? Right.
And that was the biggest deal. And I've happened to bring that up to the ladies. I said, yeah, you're probably right. Open flame would not be a good idea. Okay. So
I think there's room in here for us to consider cutting, no doubt. But I think we need to have the discussion. So.
I didn't want to. If we wanted to prioritize the savings other places, then that would be a discussion.
Sure.
I think they'll see our point of view and say go for it. But yeah, I'm with Ron.
Well, I think we've got a little bit of time to work. I think the pricing is good for 60 days.
60 days. So what I'd really like to do is to, in the next 7 or so days, get the concrete value. And if we're about truly value engineering where we're not adding anything, saying take these things out of the scope of the contract or do this in lieu of this, then that's something where we can basically write a narrative that the contractor would then take, and they would put a letter on their letterhead and seal, says we will deduct this from our bid, and basically the contract can be written on the value of that amended to their bid. So it's fairly uncomplicated. But that would allow, because the other thing that we want to do is make sure that their contract can actually be executed by, you know, all of the legal folks involved in the duration of time remaining that they're holding the price. The flooring, so this is one of the things that actually surprised me fairly significantly, because we actually priced the folks who call on us, let us know exactly what's involved. And there was a little bit of...
You know, regularly you want to see.
Yes, we just wanted to support the item resolution.
I'm sorry. No, you're fine. So we have a porcelain tile. This is the porcelain tile in the main space that you walk into, separating the two components of the building. And then we've got a carpet, which this is one of the carpets. There are accents in this same carpet that have colors to them. But effectively, this is the quality of the carpet that's the basis of design. And the numbers that we got from bid day, they only got one bid for some of the flooring products, and it was inordinately high. So we actually called up a bunch of folks who usually bid our work and said, hey, what gives? And so the tile number was about $35,000 higher than our estimate. And our estimate, we knew what the actual price from the distributor was for the product. So somewhere between here and there, somebody was buying a moat. And over here on the carpet, the same thing was going on. So we're like, well, and that's, you know, like, we know what these numbers are. Why do you only have one sub-number for these two packages? Because we shouldn't have to change anything, and your number should save at least $40,000, if not closer to between 50 and 60, between those two things to get the basis of design products. So we have, with A.R. Chesson's approval, because we don't want to kind of be monkeying around with subcontractors, we said, look, these are folks who bid our stuff all the time. What's going on? So I feel like without changing anything, we can get a whole lot closer to the numbers that we included than the numbers that this one subcontracted bidder included. If for some reason that's not the case, then I have my interior designers will shoot me, but I have no qualms at all about saying, nope, we're gonna get a whole lot simpler than this, because I know what the cost of some of these simpler finishes are. The challenge is, this is already like $3.15 as material cost on a per square foot basis. Even final composite tile, like you see out there, it's about $1.50. So this is not expensive. Usually porcelain tile is $12, $13, $14 a square foot. So it's a very cost-effective tile. So maybe they just didn't know what they were pricing, but I would like to work with the finish package and get that number down, because I feel like we can at least save $50,000.
That's good. That's good.
I don't think anyone's sort of objectionable to us monkeying around with that. I don't think any of the users are so wed to exactly what's where. And if worse came to worse, it may be an actual finish change. We would basically use a cheaper carpet. If they wouldn't give us the actual price, we would just say, give us a cheaper carpet. And the same thing would be true on this. If they will not give us a fair price for the tile, then we could say, well, give us this other product where we know what that cost per square foot is. And then if they don't, give us fair pricing on that, I mean, at some level, I don't want the value proposition to be poor for the county. I mean, that it's, if A.R. Chesson at this point wants this contract, so they've put a lot of time into doing it, so I don't think they're going to just throw their hands up and say, oh, we're walking away. If they've got bad sub numbers, that's different from them making less money. So,
I wonder why nobody's bidding.
I think on some of the packages, it was just, it's you know, this is a big tile. There are not a lot of local companies that lay this much tile. A lot of the ones we work with are from Kinston or Raleigh that can come in and knock a job out in a hurry for, you know, a significant amount of commercial tile. And so the company that they had, at least on the on one of the two, I think they just had a really high number. And it wasn't, basically, it's not like a rolled good like this for the carpet. They're squared, and this is, or I say squared. This is the actual size of the carpet. You don't see any of the seams when they go down and how they're staggered, but there is potentially more labor involved if someone's never done it before. But usually that doesn't impact the pricing at all. One other large line item that kind of happened very late in the process was the electrified hardware. So we have very high quality hardware on all of our exterior and interior doors, but a large percent of the exterior doors and the primary doors into interior spaces are prepped and include electrified lock sets. So basically strike release type locks. That value to make them electrified is about $50,000. Which is, on a building this size, that's pretty significant. If you were a large Vidant type organization that is monitoring all your door locking with a security office in a central location. And you're basically like, oh, I've got a notice here that door 4 on building X isn't shut properly. Then that person would call the local maintenance supervisor and say, hey, can you go check this door? And I'm not sure how the county here operates using your electrified locking systems, because I understand you have some on other county buildings, but $50,000 is fairly significant operationally. So,
how many locks do you have?
It's a good number of locks, because it's you have direct exterior doors on a number of locations. So you've got
the only one I would be concerned with, and I've said this over and over, is the one in the children's area.
So there are, you know,
there'd be a
pair of double doors on either end of the large space that separates Cooperative Extension from the balance of the library space. So both of those two sets of doors would get the hardware. Then you also have all of the hardware from that space into the primary function spaces. So like into the library. So effectively that could be controlled on a time basis. So every day without manually unlocking anything, it could basically be set to a time clock where the interior door of the library might open automatically without someone having to, you know, dog a door open. And then that's gonna reduce some time in terms of opening that at the beginning of the day, closing it back at the end of the day. But that can be time operated effectively, is what that would allow you to do. Same thing would happen in the in your community space. So because different users can have access to that, it was functionally to be separated from the balance of the space. So that's a fairly significant line item for a building this size. I just, not knowing how the county operates those kinds of things, needed to circle back around that.
Do you know how many locks we're talking about?
You are talking about more than 12 lock sets that are electrified.
I'm going to take the time, because I've been listening to exactly what I think. The wood decking and millwork, I'm saying for me, because I'm a woman. I do not go in Walmart and look at that ceiling. I haven't. So,
I don't know what it looks like.
Yeah, so to me, if you can find something cheaper, hey, no problem. It may add to it, but I just don't do that because I'm not a contractor. The need for the hood, if the regular house would work, hey, let's use it. We ain't got the money, don't play it.
Right.
You know,
it's just whoever the purse holding agency is needs to be the one that says, hey, that looks like a lot of money on the table to do that. Please, Mr. Architect, go back and evaluate that with your user. Let me know whether that's a necessity at this point based on the pricing or not. I need someone to give me that direction.
And as far as the flooring, I'm kind of keen on flooring because I do look at the floors. I'd rather have something durable.
Yes.
Maintenance almost free.
Yes.
Because the carpet,
easily
it looks,
clean.
Yeah, and it looks terrible sometimes if it messes up. If you have a good tile, it'll last for a long time. And we're looking more long term, I would think, for the flooring than to go a cheaper route, because that messes up the whole scene.
Sure. And that's, I mean, so this is, you know, we're shooting for about $216,000-ish to make it match your budget right now.
Yeah.
So if we kind of look down these line items, the electrified hardware, we talked about that. And then the site contractor put together sort of a whole litany of small things that would save about $36,000. They're not trivial per se, but changing the thickness of the asphalt, things that I would really want to get and evaluate with my civil engineer. But the site pricing is already very good. So for him to come and offer $36,000 to change a handful of sort of miscellaneous things at $1,000 here and there. I've probably got a list of 15 items from the site contractor. I don't feel super strongly about any of those. It really gets back to your point about your flooring. You know, how robust your parking lot is will have a lot to do with, you know, how much heavy traffic are you going to get in that parking lot, and how quick are you going to repave it. That's really the bottom line. It's going to be fine for the first 10 years, no matter what you do. It's just, you know, if you get super heavy traffic and you, end up driving a vehicle that goes unloads your dumpster.
Well, a lot of bus traffic.
Right. Well, now, the bus loop is heavy duty.
Okay.
And so is the stretch that basically goes, the stretch of pavement that goes to the dumpster pad and back. So all of that is a heavy duty.
So all that's going to stay heavy duty.
So I would keep that heavy duty. And that's about half the pavement anyway. So it's kind of, I don't know that the site contractor was really thinking about that when he offered up that beam, to be completely frank.
Okay.
The electrified hardware, let's go back to that. You said it was half for a building this size. Is there a possibility that that was bid wrong? Or
I don't think it's bid wrong. I just think it's we've already got what I would consider some of the best quality extra heavy duty hardware that you're going to get anyway. And then you also add that it's electrified. And that's not just on one or two doors. It's on all the doors in the building, basically. All the doors are very high quality commercial grade hardware. And then you basically take the highest use doors and you add the electrified component on top of that. You're probably looking at a turnkey price per door of over $1,400 a door before you put the electrified hardware on. And that's the frame, the door itself, the hardware associated with it. So it's not cheap.
But to my thinking, the electrified portion of the hardware is different from just the structural of what we see. So what we see is fine, but the question here is whether or not it needs to be electrified or not.
Yes, sir.
Right? And this is interior doors.
Both.
And exterior doors.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So when you can say that they're 12, 14 or whatever, couldn't we simply reduce the number?
We could, but we would want to be, we would probably want to include whoever's going to maintenance and service this building, because ultimately, what is the reason that you're using the electrified sets to begin with?
All right,
it's basically so that key doors are unlocked automatically and no one even has to go.
So we need to re-examine the use of electrified doors.
That would
be reasonable,
for that
right?
price, yes, sir. I would say so.
If I remember right, the lock system that we had, we're paying about $4,000 per two locks. Mm-hmm. I think a controller will work two locks.
So
yeah, that price you're looking at.
Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking, if there's a shooter, you could automatically lock down.
Well, a lot of things.
Some
that's why I think this is
you can do that, but also
that's really going to highlight that the quality of the hardware is not inferior at all. So from a safety standpoint, the only thing you would be foregoing is the ability, if you have an electrified system, that you can centrally monitor and control. But that has to do with actually how you operate your electrified locks. Is if you have the ability to do that, from where do you have that control point? And then you could theoretically lock everything down if you wanted to, but
from one location.
But from a standpoint of, do most libraries do that?
You know, you feel that truck somewhere.
No, we can do that here. We can control it.
Having offices, deputies, we want to hire that.
You can delete them. You can make them more than one open. What you're talking about sounds like a lot more sophisticated than what we have, but what we have works great. So,
yeah. By the time we logged in, he's already in.
This model was active.
Well, there's also a lot of doors on this building.
It's just like if a child gets missing in that library, you can lock it down until the child is found. You know, I was in a
No, you can't do that.
Department store.
So you can't lock the doors so that they'll lock the inside because it's an assembly occupancy building, so you're going to have panic devices. Mm-hmm. So you can have alarmed doors, usually like in a gym or a library, you'll have alarmed doors where there's a contactor, and when that contactor on the alarmed doors breaks, then the localized alarm goes off.
You can't come in from the outside, but you can get out and the panic goes off.
Because as soon as you have a room that has more than 50 people in it, you start to trigger the need for the way the doors swing, do you have a crash bar on the door, lots of those kinds of things. So you can't, even in a mental hospital, there's a delayed lock. If there's a fire, they have to be able to get out. And there's a delayed system on that, or prison, there's a delayed system on those as well, where it delays and lets them out into the yard. But it doesn't stay locked to the inside in no circumstance. Because if the building's on fire, then that's typically a much more frequent problem than an active shooter scenario.
So what level of guidance, again, are you looking for from us?
I wanted to make sure that if we're trying to get to the full value of the savings that we were looking for, are there any items that should be off the table in the opinion of the board? And I need to know that before I actually have extremely firm numbers from my contractor.
We all can disagree. I can say, this is my opinion. The only thing that I would, first of all, I think the glazing, we should take that. Mm-hmm. I think the elimination of the commercial goods, I think that's a great possibility. Mm-hmm. The flooring, I think absolutely.
Absolutely.
You working with to get the same thing. Mm-hmm. The electrified, we need to re-examine that use to look at possible reduction in the site work, take that. But the wood decking and millwork, I hear what you say. But I think, to me, we should not do that because that will change what you see. You may not notice it so much because you may not look up, but you'll say, this don't look quite as good as I thought it was going to look. And it's because you don't have that.
Yeah,
it'll make a big difference. It's
like a
warehouse.
Like a warehouse.
Like you walk
in.
It's going to look like Walmart. How's that?
It's going to look like.
Yeah, I ain't never really paid attention
to Walmart.
It's a busy shopping.
Yeah.
But it looks. I don't like the look at the 4-H Center in Columbia.
It will look like that.
Yeah. In that one room, we use it as a chapel, but it's got, you see the ductwork and all that.
Well, that's what it would look like with all that.
So you will see the ductwork in this building in the library side, but it will be spiraled up. It won't. I think at the 4-H Center, the room you're referring to where you see the duct, it's like a sock duct. It's a fabric duct. This is not that.
Like they got the gym over there at the school.
So this will be a spiral duct. And it'll have lights that kind of hang down through the trusses. But there'll be a pretty substantive difference if you have something like this that you see up on top of the trusses as opposed to, because what will happen is that the contractor is not going to put the screws in straight. And you're going to see all the undersides of, you can paint it out like they do at Walmart, but if you go to Sam's Club, any of those places, you're Lowe's, you go up and look at it, and you will see all of the fasteners.
Please don't do it.
Okay, so I can go with them with wood decking and the millwork. But let's not mess up the floor then.
Okay.
Do whatever you want.
We just floor people.
Yeah.
Okay. Do what you want.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. There are obviously some bigger things that we haven't even thrown out, but those seem like the easiest ones. Those are the biggest sort of anomalies from our cost estimate. There was also some decent savings offered on like a video surveillance systems and things like that. That I don't know if the county has vendors that you could always have the routing, the conduit in, and all of the camera systems and all that could really be turnkey to the county as a singular vendor as opposed to having that in the contractor's contract. So that's, I think I've got some decent savings that was offered on that front as well. from the contractor. So, you know,
that may be something we want to look at, because we have a really
we've done it before
big yeah. situation.
Yeah, that's
local yeah. Number, so if you can let us know that number. Then.
Okay, so it sounds like we should be able to get fairly close to our full VE number using those outboard of considering the decking, and really talk to a cooperative extension about the true everyday use of their space and make sure that that's really, you know, at that number, a necessity.
Okay.
And so then the only thing we would need to do is if for some reason we didn't cover that full value, what would we're going to get close one way or the other, but if we don't cover that full value, what things do we want to put on the table? Or
well, I think the architectural firm could kick in maybe 10%.
I hear you.
Over and that'd be about $40,000 or $50,000, and I think we'll be just fine then.
Yeah, but that 100,000 in the drywall is part of that 216 you're trying to say, right?
So the 100,000 in the drywall package, if you look at their number, it's just under 3.9, and you look at Winco's number, which is 4.1. So what's the difference in those two numbers? The two biggest contributors to how much lower they got were the drywall.
That number was already figured in.
So the site package and the drywall package together were the reasons that they were lower than largely.
So the two things that we really want is the wood, right, and the flooring, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's really what I need to know, because that gives me the direction I need to be able to go back and sit with ARHS and say we've got to get this with these as the last resort, and that's where we're headed. And hopefully I can put a dollar figure by every item in front of the board and the county here within the next 7 days. Will be my goal.
And if there's a commissioner or two that would like to sit in and help work through these discussions with, you know, we say partner, well, It's the partner that doesn't have any money to bring
exactly.
to the table. So I mean, they don't have a lot of leverage. I think they'll
work with us once.
Think about this too in the scheme of things. So
they'll understand the stuff.
My understanding is that for soft costs, that the library folks have some grant money in the tune of about $400,000. We're only talking about $200,000 of difference to have everything on the base bid list right now. So one of the things I've been trying to the approach I've had is we can probably achieve $100,000 without changing anything almost at all, without even asking any of the users.
Yeah, but see that, but again, we don't have furnishing involved here either.
Okay? Right.
There's no furnishing in this bid whatsoever, mm-hmm. nor do we have any funding for that. So I would think.
Well, the alternate three was the library involved.
That's what I'm talking about.
And we've got no money for any alternates, so it may be that we have to ask the library to kick in for the library loft, and that runs anywhere from $150,000 down to maybe $30,000 or so. I mean, it's a wide range.
Yeah, and again, there's no furniture, as I said again, mm-hmm. and I think Albie with Commissioner Baysmore and I came over there, you said typically 10% was going to cover furnishing, so you're right at $400,000. And that's on the upper end side.
Right.
Maybe we can go 6 or 7% being the medium side of it.
Right.
But
I
didn't even know about that till I think you said the other day about it or something.
Have we spent the money that was donated?
A big chunk of it went to buy the land.
Okay.
So that, I mean, largely right now.
We build a beautiful building, but then we ain't got the furnishings for it.
Well, to make up, I think if we have a $400,000 worth of grant money from the library, that's going to go a very long way to
populate
the building properly.
I agree, and I think that's what I hope that they would want to come our way with.
Right. So, I mean, we're effectively talking about, you know, around $200,000 that we're trying to make up right now, about 100 of which should be very easy. The second 120 will require us to kind of go back and forth.
The point I'm making is $400,000 needs good furnishing, not to making up the savings there. What we talked about should make up that savings.
Right.
Come
All right. Thank you all. Is there any other set of questions that I need to work through with the contractor? I mean, there's a lot of little nickel and dime stuff on the table in terms of finishes. So we've got like quartz counters instead of plastic laminate, for instance, at the circulation desk where people are going to come every day.
You got quartz counters?
We've got some.
Nice, man.
There's some finish money to be saved, but I just like you're talking about
that
saving it.
Gives it the look, though.
It is, and it's not it's not going to feel cheap right now at all. And what I don't want to do is take a bunch of value engineering where they're saying, "Oh, here you're going to save $100,000, but you really should have saved $200,000 if you had bid that difference." So I just want to make sure any money you save is that we're reaping the full value of savings.
I mean, I think if we keep those things we're talking about, and you got quartz counters on them, and this thing's really going to look really good.
Okay.
And it's not going to look like something that's in Bertie County, I can tell you that. Okay. And that's what we're shooting for.
I mean, I think there's a different level of use to, you know, this piece right here of furniture is fine as plastic laminate. If you don't touch it and interact with it, and you don't have 150 patrons on it every day, as soon as it is, it's different. So, if there are no more questions, I appreciate
that. While we have the benefit of the architect, let's just make sure everybody's understanding the alternates that are not funded. The first one is the folding partition, that curtain that divides the community room. We've built in the structural hardware, the I-beam. The actual curtain that's going to, there's no funding for that.
It's an acoustic folding door. It's very heavy and it's got a little bit of sort of secondary steel that holds the tracks when they're in their folded position. But the primary beam that's required to hang a fairly substantive amount of weight from is in the contract. So should you at any point say it's about a $24,000 item, it was one of the alternates that there were a bunch of parties here. Let's see, folding partition. The numbers range from
26 to 42.
Yeah, 26 to 42, yeah, was the range on that partition. And that has a specific spec. It's it's the full height of the room, so it's not that tall. It'll make it still feel like one room. You see it a lot of convention centers.
We had an outdoor maintenance building that Cooperative Extension wanted for their chemicals and things, which is like a one-car garage, basically. And those bids came in from $25,000 to $67,000. We can probably get somebody to build it for a whole lot closer to that.
You get a she-she.
She-she burnt down.
Again, the reading loft was all over the place. 150 on the high side, 15,000 on the low side, and it'd probably be somewhere in between.
What was that?
The reading loft.
That's nice little piece. It's got some nice cubbies and places to plug in their iPhones.
It's a nice piece.
But I think that the library could probably figure out how to work with a furniture vendor to make a custom piece of furniture that could actually be that. So I think within their furniture budget, they could probably figure it out. Yep. So.
Number four was there's a mezzanine up above where we'll have access for the heating and air conditioning. Anthony Rasko was really hoping that we'd have the stairs and the handrails to get up there instead of having a ladder going up the wall. And the bids on that ran from $24,000 to $35,000, because it's a steel set of.
What's the steel stair with all the handrails associated with it? So as soon as you take all of them, the handrails are not cheap. So as soon as you put all that in, you still get the mezzanine up at the top, but the mezzanine is accessed through a hatch with a fixed ladder that comes from a storage room. So
adequate.
Kind of like it's not like a pull down. Disappearing ladder, but like the kind you would have mounted to side of the building on the inside or the outside.
What we have in the old courthouse.
Right.
Only they won't be the wooden ones that you only have that room for your foot.
They're not putting nothing up there they need.
Number five was an easy one. That was the aluminum lettering on the outside of the building. Only $5,000. You could probably find somebody to donate that to have the lettering. the reading circle, which is out in that mezzanine area, those were $21,000 up to $37,000. And again, is that the cushions?
So
we're
that,
still going to have the circle, right?
So you're still going to have, what will happen is the wall will be there, the wall cap will be there. So there's a sort of semicircular wall, and on the inside of that there'll be carpet, and on the outside of that there'll be the hard surface. The carpet sort of helps with the acoustics on the inboard side, and the alternate actually basically included the tiered seating built up against the wall. So to be able to do tiered seating there, as opposed to like having folks sit down, elementary school kids right now, what they do in the libraries, they sit down on the carpet for story time. So we were hoping to have an improvement where there's sort of a built-in tiered system that they could sit against, but there's obviously a cost associated with that. So they could still have a combination of sitting and mobile chairs, but the space is available, but that's a pretty significant line item.
And then alternate number 7, you'll have to help describe. That was the chair rail and wood base. And
so, okay, yeah. That, so in the community room, we, instead of just having rubber base in there, which is what's in the base bid, there was some discussion about if you have a whole bunch of mobile pieces of furniture that you, exactly like you have in here, you're not moving the chairs, but you end up with sort of a black line at the height of the chairs all the way around. So we were going to put a wood chair rail and wall covering gusts from the chair rail down to help mitigate that being an issue. And that line item basically ranged from $7,000 to $20,000. That was to basically not have rubber base, to have all wood trim and the wall covering below the chair rail height. So that's what that line item was for. Now, depending on which furniture you pick to put in that room, it may be less of an issue.
That could be a Mr. Jernigan add-on later.
Yes, so then he can do it. Worried the fool out of it.
Let's see here. We also had a couple of unit prices, which as a frame of reference, we had for unsatisfactory soils in excess of the allowance value that we had in the bid. We had unit prices that ranged from $19 a cubic yard to $60 a cubic yard. So the craziness in those numbers, I think Calvin Davenport builds a lot of wood framed things, and so there were some places where, like the reading loft number, his wood frame number was 14 for the reading loft, $14,000, and the high bid was $150,000. The unit prices were the exact opposite of that. So anything that had to do with steel, the unit prices for unsuitable soils, he was 3x the other guys. So it was cable tray. So if we wanted to have a cable tray on a unit system, so if you're going to run a bunch of systems above ceiling so that they're not just sitting snaked across your ceiling from a re-pulling standpoint, we had a per foot price for additional cable tray, and that went from $17 an additional foot to $75. There's already conduit in there, but if you wanted to pull other systems after the fact, it just makes it easier. And then wall coverings. So if they wanted to match the wall covering that we had in the one location and other places in the building, Cooperative Extension wanted wall covering in their whole space instead of painted walls. We're like, that's probably not in the budget, but we didn't just want to tell them no. But the additional wall covering went from, this is an installed price, went from $6 a square yard to $50. So those were the unit prices. So there was a pretty big spread on some of those numbers as well. Any other questions?
So we probably need to work this out in the next 10 days or so?
I'm going to go back now to Will with AR Chestnut and probably Al. And and Doug Chesson as well.
And can you get back with us how much money we have over and above, if there is any, because you said maybe another $120,000 or something like that?
Say that again.
Okay. We've done told you what we want and what we don't.
Yeah.
Okay. That should cover the overage or get close to it, I would think. And you said there may be another $100,000 to $120,000 in savings, or did I misunderstand you?
No, I think what I was saying is the first $100,000 is easy, the second $120,000 is not. Okay. Or is not just, hey, why did you get bad bids?
Not
the second, that's the difference.
Because if I added up all the possibilities you said here, like the Glazer came out at about 170 some thousand, so you're really close to about 35,000.
Well,
and we got everything.
And that way we got it.
If you take Copeland and take other things, some of the stove stuff works.
So, Scott, don't you have money? Didn't I see a line item for
$75,000 evidence for kitchen equipment? Those stoves, the refrigerators, the metal tables that they're going to be training on and cooking on.
Did I say 140-something?
Yeah, that's the total. Then you throw in, as he mentioned, they're putting in the conduit for all the data lines and telephone lines, but we're going to have to get someone else to do the running the wire through. They'll have pull strings, is my understanding, but we'll have to put in our own wiring and then terminate each one at a jack for the data and telephones. And then I think there was another piece for some networking and surveillance. And if there's some money to be saved on the cameras, that'd be real helpful to maybe offset part of that. But they had some really nice kitchen appliances that I think you would describe as commercial grade that aren't what you would necessarily find at Lowe's. So we may have to have a discussion with them about maybe just knocking that down a little bit.
Yeah, I mean there's probably as much money spent in that room on the cooperative extension side as the whole rest of cooperative extension. Mm-hmm.
He's trying to get some money, but I don't know where he's at.
I just a thought. I mean, when you get to the bottom of this, you have things like the reading circle, mm-hmm. which I thought was a really nice feature rather than sitting on the floor. I mean, you could offer it to citizens, say, hey, we'll name this reading circle mm-hmm. for you. You pay the price on it. We're going to put it in, you know?
But those are the kinds of things where, you know, we could always come back and try to negotiate it in as a change order, but if we wanted it at the fixed price that A.R. Chesson has in their offerings, we would probably need to have some party say, hey, I'll pick that up. I can figure out how to make that up before you actually incur that cost. Then you could probably lock that number in, but you would need to figure out some way to make sure that if the contractor is saying, yes, we're accepting it contingent upon the donations coming in, but you have some way of actually backing out before you get there if you had to. So, I mean, that's...
We can always start with beanbag chairs and work our way out.
Yeah, our thought was, if right now the circle time is the most, one of the highest uses of the library space, but it's also the most disruptive to the balance of library patrons. So we felt like it was a sort of an interesting idea to take that function and sort of put it in this sort of generally noisier space anyway.
I can see that being something used often.
Right. Well, I hope that I've at least informed the board adequately, and as soon as there are numbers to say yes or no to, I'll present that to Scott and the board for approval.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Scott, I think the next thing we'll do is propose facilities use agreement.
Right, and I think Jonathan's going to be our guiding discussion person on.
Take two and pass it down. Their staff get two, it's side by side. It's top two, and then there's another layer. Should it be a it's not bad. So what I passed out are two documents. One is the one on top. It's called Burton County Recreation Department Procedure for Renting One of Our Facilities. And then the second page is what it really is, which is the policies. It's a set of policies for use of the park. And the second document is the same facility use agreement you saw the last meeting, but it's got some blue line changes on it that came from a set of pool, the county pool attorneys. There's a program that the insurance pool has where if a sheriff's deputy or county attorney or somebody wants to have them look at a document on the front end of an agreement or of a use to see, let them lay another set of eyes on it to see if there's any better ways to protect the county or the sheriff's department rather than wait till a claim arises and then decide what we could have done to better protect the county or the sheriff's office. I thought that was a great program that I heard about. And so I took advantage of it. It's free to the county, there's no charge. And so these blue line changes came from them. A couple of attorneys at T. Campbell. And so overall, I spoke to them on the phone about it Friday. They were satisfied overall with the agreement. After we go through these changes, I'd like to kind of take a broad view and then we can decide if we're going to go through any specific changes. But on the facility use agreement, mainly they like the idea of calling it an expense. They like the idea of having the user reimburse the county their expenses rather than pay the county a fee. And I think the reason for that is they see the word fee as being like a, potentially can be interpreted as a money-making proposition. And when you're doing, as a county, when you're doing a money-making proposition, which is a proprietary function, you're more likely to lose your sovereign immunity if there's ever a claim than if you're just simply collecting expenses for something that you're already doing. So that's the way they like to characterize it as a cost or expense rather than a fee. And then there's just some other parts of it that just a little changes that are pretty straightforward. The biggest thing for today that's new, and I'm not asking you guys to take any action on this, and I'll tell you in a second why. So I'm not asking you to take any action on either one of these today. Tell you what the second one is before I tell you why. The second one is that policy. This is the policy that I've put together using what Donna already had on the County Recreation website. And I took a lot of stuff that I gleaned from looking at a lot of different counties and cities when I put together, what-ifs sort of thing, legalese for the use agreement. I put some of this into the policy. So I used Donna's policy, I added my policy, and then I specifically put in a section on facility closure policy. That is what the Parks people wanted to see before they would agree to let us close the park for an individual user. They seem to be that they're willing to go with it, but they want to see. They said, "Well, you got to have a general policy in place first, so we can see that you've sort of laid out. You can see various issues. You can identify. When are you going to close the park? What are the hours? What are the are you closed for holidays? Are you closed for special community events? What do you close the park? You don't want to be seen as, it's good because you don't want to be seen as picking and choosing, playing favorites or anything like that. So they said, we want to see your policy. So one of the things they said to us when they said, we want to see your policy, is they said, well, this guy that wants to do it, this first guy, is he charging for the public to get in? Is he totally excluding the public? Is a totally private list? And I was like, I don't really know. So you guys saw my email, Scott knows. I called Randy on Friday, had a fairly long conversation with him. And yes, he is charging a fee. And yes, the public wants to pay the fee, they can come in. He was getting some bands. So he needs to be able to pay for it. Now, the reason I'm asking for immediate action, that would be if he was still wanting to use our facility. He's in the meantime, he's decided he wanted to use, he was lining up bands, he needed to firm up his location. So he knew that we were dealing with a part of people, that this was a new thing, and he said, I'm going to go ahead and do it somewhere else, and then maybe next year I can come back and do it with the county. So he's, you know, and I explained to him, he says, why is this any different than if I wanted to use the River Center, you know, with the town? And I said, yeah, I know, I've been down to the River Center. But I said, this is different in that they didn't use PARF dollars, millions of PARF dollars, grant dollars to build the River Center. I don't think they did, not to my knowledge. And so, you know, we have a special step on this that we have to get cleared before we could let you use the park. And so he understands the difference of why this is taking more time than what it might have been if he had just asked the town to use the River Center. So I feel like, you know, we're in a decent place, and but I felt like we don't need to, Friday, I felt like, well, we don't need to just throw our hands up and say, well, Randy's not doing this, so let's just quit.
Another request.
There's going to be another one coming, yeah. If not, a year from now, he'll be wanting to do it again.
So to the short of the story is, we can do this in the future?
Number two says...
I haven't read it, so I don't know.
If they're good with our number two on the second page of this Burton County facility, this policy, this number two, in. Number one, two, three, if they're good with that, see, all the rest of it's just a lot of used stuff. Don't pick up your trash. But like one, two, three, if they're good with that, then we can do it. I can't tell you for sure until they get a look at this. And so this is the first time you've seen it today, and so I'm not expecting you to read it and say, yeah, let's send it to PARF. But what I would like is if we could take it into consideration, and maybe by next meeting we could decide whether we want to. And I don't want Donna, of course, to have an input on it to see if she has any additional questions or concerns. And then we can present it to the PARF people and see if they would agree with that language. And then... And if they do, then yes, the answer is yes. Then from then on, we're even though each full park closure is probably going to take another request of them. Once we got through the first one and we know what they like and what they don't like, I think it'd be pretty straightforward from there.
Okay. Well,
and number two is pretty spelled out.
Yeah, I just tried to basically say, I want. I noticed already that the county has a policy. They don't rent the playground. It's an inclusive playground, which, you know, anybody with any sort of disabilities can use it. And it's the only one that I know of to that extent in the whole area. And so, so I got that feel and talked to Donna, and she said, yeah, we really, you know, we don't rent that. We want to always keep that open. So I sort of incorporated that into this policy and said, look, if you're going to rent the whole park, you need to still provide access to people to use that playground. Okay. Now, bouncing that off you.
Maybe rent's part of the park. That's going to be private at that time, right?
Yeah, I think at that point, yeah.
As long as everybody can come in if they want to pay.
Every county and town in this, I was looking at Mecklenburg County, and they have a list of fees. I mean, our list of fees is a half a page for what we've got to rent. They have one that's about six pages long, and they rent, if you got the dollar, they rent it to you. And so I know, I'm sure they've used some part of money, and I'm sure that these guys have, the short of it is, I think a partial rental is much, much, much more palatable to the part of people than a complete closure of the park. So you can close off, you can use two ball fields, but you still got to allow people access to the rest of the facility, including the playground. Mm-hmm. I don't see any problem with a totally private, you know, somebody like a league wants to come use the softball park. Well, and they pay their fee. Well, nobody can come in and say, well, hey, we want to use it while you guys use it. I mean, obviously that they should be allowed to sort of be private and do their own thing. But where I built in some requirements is if someone wants to use the whole facility. So if Randy Cherry wants to come back again next year and do a veterans fundraiser like he is, that's great. Use the whole park. But I think we'll find out now. We'll find out if part of it's good with this, but find a charge a fee because you got to pay your bands, you got to pay your insurance, you got to pay for what you got to pay for and raise money. But, you know, let the public at least pay to come in. And secondly, there's got to be some way to let people come in and use the playground.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, there are two things. I mean, you know, first of all, you know, it's great that we can have a policy. We need to have a type of policy. I was thinking if somebody was going to have an event for children, right? And would that, could that be a private event? Might need to be, so you keep the public, anybody from in that area where you're having this for small kids. And I feel more comfortable knowing that that was an area reserved for people who were part of this organization doing whatever, right?
Right.
So that would work. But the other part I think we have to make, I'm a bit concerned about, is that we don't allow outside organizations to come in, and because we have a schedule of saying, yeah, you can use this event, lock down all of the major dates and things so that it's really not available to the public because this organization, this entity, is using it every Friday or every Saturday. So people don't get a chance, the public doesn't really get a chance to use it when they want to. Follow what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah.
I know that happens in a lot of places.
Okay.
We don't have a field over here, so we want to come over here and use this, and we want to lock it down for our whole schedule for the year.
Okay.
I don't particularly like that.
Like a league, like say a softball league.
Whatever.
Yeah. A league or any type of association of some sort.
Yeah,
we probably needs to be worded in there somewhere.
Yeah, from an organization, even a school that doesn't have a field, I'm going to go and use, that's going to be mine now, the public facility, because you've got a use policy, and I just put my whole schedule in.
Yeah, we got to
figure out the way. Money right here.
Nah.
And here's the money here.
Yeah. So we got to figure out a way to say that you can't lock down a certain.
Yeah, I mean, you would just have to be.
Set of either favorable dates, holiday dates, Friday nights.
Right. Yeah, that's all.
And we can give the director discretion on the front end to say, we'll give you these, but we're not going to give you these because you're locking down too much. But the danger is, yeah, once if the director doesn't foresee somebody else wanting some time and she lets them go ahead and rent it all out, then her hand's kind of tied at that point. So I'm trying to give out the way to.
What are you thinking about? Put some sort of verbiage in there.
Yeah, you've got to have a balance.
Just
you
think
know,
about
so that we don't lock so far in advance that you know nobody else can even consider using it.
Well, okay. I guess limit the days of one clinic can be reserved this time.
I think it's almost. Well, maybe you can look at some verbiage that limits accessibility.
What's your suggestion, Greg?
Well, the number of days that one group, one entity can.
Right. Yeah.
Like 6 times a year or 4 times a year or whatever.
Or you can't lock it for so much time in advance, right? I mean, because most people don't know. I can't, most citizens wouldn't know I'm going to need to use it 3 months from now, right? An organization wouldn't know. They got a schedule. They're going to use it, you know. Well, so you know, wouldn't allow them to lock out but so far in advance.
Or somebody wants to come and lease it every month for the same thing every single month.
Right.
Lock it.
Yeah.
Limited use policy.
Well, Mecklenburg County has an actual little policy that I skimmed. It's called their, it's called something along the lines of first come, first served policy of renting facilities. And I think it might have some language in there that
for limited use.
Doesn't allow one person to come and just block the whole thing out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I'll take a look at that.
Okay. And it can't interfere with the seasons and things that we're used to.
Now there's something clearly that Donna already had in there that we definitely kept in there that says no amount of somebody coming in wanting to rent can interfere with the existing
seasons
and leagues and things that she's already got going for.
That's true.
First.
That comes first. That's in there. Yeah. That works.
Three beats.
Well, I got one. I've got one. But I'll take another. Anybody, nobody else wants another? I got one.
I took
one. Okay. They're all now up to.
Are we finished for right now?
I think we are.
A couple of
is that it?
Well, did you want to bring up the vans and talk
about
that?
I just was asking, has he contacted you? And we haven't worked on
I've not heard from anybody on a van request.
Have you talked to Ishmael about the vans? Okay. I was just wondering, because it's that time when we haven't done anything with that policy, of course.
Well, and if the board might recall, when we checked with our insurance carrier, Our vehicles can be used and borrowed.
Last year there wasn't staff, right? Well, there was a van.
Well, we had been working under the impression that we had to have staff driving the vehicles. Mm-hmm. And the insurance carrier, who's the same group that Jonathan's been working with, have clarified that if it's a county van and we're supporting a community project or community effort, we can loan that van out if it's not being used for another purpose. I guess the Hope Festival they had recently, they had access to the vans. They used their volunteers to drive them.
Which was different than prior year, because in prior years we paid
Donna and Collins. Yeah, we thought we had to have a staff member to do it.
Yeah.
Or if the Rotary Club wanted to borrow it and take a group of folks to an event. Or, so,
to me, that's what we ought to be about. Because, I mean, just take Nishman's case. When he used the van, he paid more than any other person that's ever used that van before. More to the people who we said he had to pay, did things that nobody else had ever done. Fill up the things with gas, whole works. Nobody ever did that before. And there were no issues. So I don't even know why we, you know.
I thought it was already known that the attorney handled it that day.
So she but not. I've not had any calls. And he may call Donna first, and Donna's not mentioned. But speaking of vans, let me mention real quick, as we're planning for the Burt T. Beach Day, we don't think our three or four recreation vans are going to do it. We're probably going to lease a couple of other vans, maybe as many as three, through our enterprise contract and have some extra people driving, because we don't want anybody to have to be sitting out there in the sun waiting to get down to the waterfront. We're thinking the vans could come about every 15 minutes to haul folks down there. But it's really coming together. Sarah's kind of leading the team in concert with Donna and Steve Biggs. And we're going to have fish fry. We're going to have hot dogs. We're going to have snow cones. We're going to have kayaks available with life jackets and paddles for kids to. We'll have supervision. We're just hoping and praying the weather is good. There's none of that green stuff in the water. But if it's anything like this past weekend, it was gorgeous.
And we probably have to practice.
Give swimming instructions.
And again, I still want to get that photo of all the commissioners standing in your new t-shirts out in the water, about up to your knees. You can see your toes in the water down there.
As long as you get it early, because I'll be out of there.
I'll be fishing for car
I
accidents.
Would like to.
I'm going to be walking around with my neck trying to kick a car out.
All right. We good?
Yes, I just would like to submit the names of Chairman and Ron Wesley to get up early in the morning to go to WITN and talk about this wonderful day.
What about yourself?
You don't get up in the morning.
No.
Well, you can do the 11 o'clock hour.
11 o'clock.
They won't let you come then.
Darcy, have you requested it yet? Because you have to do it a long ways in advance.
Wow. I think I know Lynette.
I bet you they'll come.
I bet you they will, because this is something huge for the North Carolina.
I think we're going to be patrol.
You talking about like the announcements that they do early in the mornings? Yeah,
or they can do it as a news segment. Doesn't matter, as long as we're on the news.
We should have them here to come and film and see all of that.
Yeah.
That would be a nice spot to put that up, man.
Yeah.
So what happened to our coffee machines?
I just want to talk.
Pardon?
What happened to our coffee?
Oh, coffee's not offered during the summer months.
Yeah.
It's only.
Whoa. Wallace no, Perry took it during the summer months.
Yeah.
Wallace took it during
the winter months.
Remember we used to have now.
If the board will fire up the coffee, we can have it ready next meeting.
All right.
Make a note on that.
All right. Call the next meeting.
No, we can do it.
We've got 15 minutes.
I ate a grandson. I need a Pepsi or Sprite.
On a test day week? People already
hey, how you doing?
Uh-oh, I'm giving mad. I'm working my magic right now.
You give me those out there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, put that thing. You want a couple, I understand? Yeah. Oh, you got more than one. Woo!
She is horrible.
Since they took my computer, it was very, yeah.
board, UNC has actually hired Kane Associates, which is a banking merger acquisition company. Behind the scenes, this is a secret document that was preliminary, but secret. Okay? I've got the whole thing if you want it.
Yeah.
And this is actually came back out with this. They received this document. They've admitted to it.
Oh, yes.
So yeah, I'll just send it to you.
Just send me that too. Thanks.
Okay. This thing was going down.
What's up, Gene? What's up, man? Okay. What's up?
Doing good, Mike?
I'm gonna give you something right about today.
Because I looked at it, Jim, I said this might become a show.
Exactly, that's all he did.
But that's disgusting.
You think
that's our
worst?
We win. That's what I
thought. I guess because the stupid thing we have to do at school. Yeah, I can see better for the end. Yeah, that's good.
Be curious about yourself. Because that secret document that was handed over, I should have done it myself.
And the same one who won't do anything to help my school teacher instructor. It's Steinberg.
Exactly.
Same one.
You know, and that was posted on Facebook. Yeah. That
Facebook was dangerous.
Listen, if there was writing on it, or WITM reported, hell, I would report it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But that would take somebody to work. Not someone that.
God.
Absolutely nuts. That hospital, first of all, we are.
Listen, it's very loose. There's discrimination against rural and unfortunately.
Because they're not going to have duplication of services in some of the three hospitals. That's probably going to be something that we just got.
Delivery of babies.
And we're probably going to lose it. All right. We told him you're going to do it.
He should be proud.
But it really fits.
It really does.
I mean, it really does. Dad gets credit for this.
It's nice. I actually like him this poster. Oh, yeah.
That's
sweet.
Okay, I got three doors.
minutes, right? He did set the clock right there. Okay. 2 minutes.
Right there.
About 2 minutes. Let me see. We already did number one. I'm going to do number two. That's pretty short. Not too bad. See what your phone got.
Your phone says 1 minute.
Yeah, phone says 1 minute.
Better let you go.
Huh? You ready? No, say ring back.
My phone says 1 more minute.
Yeah.